Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody's weekend went well. It was it's been a weekend, and starting off this week where turn around and the sun's shining. Next minute, it could be raining. And it was sort of that weekend. It was an up-and-down weekend. Ended up being sort of a downer for Auburn baseball as the Tigers' season comes to a close at the hands of the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. They take Auburn in two games, 7-6 in 10, and then 4-1 in game two.
What a game Friday night, right? I mean, what an atmosphere for super regional play. And, I mean, obviously the weather delay threw a wrench into some things, you know, the lightning, yep, a couple innings in. But, no, those first few innings, I mean, it felt like, you know, something really special was happening at super regionals in Auburn. And highly competitive games, unfortunately. Coastal does enough, and it felt like because Coastal threw their ace on Saturday and Auburn decided to go with Dutton on Friday night, it felt like there was more pressure on Auburn to win that game Friday night than maybe there was on Coastal. Obviously, a ton of pressure on Auburn Saturday once Coastal wins the Friday game, but too many opportunities that Auburn couldn't take advantage of.
Yeah, that I thought really was the deciding factor for Auburn, Brian. As Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com joining us here on the Monday Drive, as he does each Monday. Auburn had their opportunities. They had base runners. Yep. They could not capitalize with men on base, and especially with men in scoring position.
Yeah, I know. I wrote this. I think it was one of 14 runners in scoring position and five of,
I don't know,
8 of 35 or something. Yeah, runners on. I have to go back and look. But
it was not poor. Good, right. It was poor.
But that's what happens when you're facing a great staff, right? It's those moments, those key moments of a game. Is that pitcher going to make the pitch, or is that hitter going to, you know, come up with that clutch hit? And more times than often, that really good pitching staff for Coastal Carolina came up with the play in those moments, and they deserved to win.
Yeah, and then after the rain delay, it felt like all the momentum was Auburn's. Auburn got down 6-1, yep, and then they scored a couple of runs before the delay, came back and scored three more runs to tie. And going to the eighth inning, yep, I mean, you really felt like, hey, Auburn's in great shape. And going to the bottom of the ninth, I mean, yep, when you go into the bottom of the ninth and you get the first two guys on, you feel like, all right, Auburn's about to win this one. And then a couple of things that, you know, you don't bunt your cleanup hitter, and I don't know how good a bunter Coop is, but
not something he's done a lot of in his career.
No, he's not been called on to do a lot.
Of course not.
But that's a situation where, you know, in hindsight, you go, man, if you could have gotten those runners to second and third, who knows? But yeah. I mean, they didn't. And then you have the soft liner up the middle that even the way it was hit, if it's six inches more towards second base, you win the game.
Yep.
But that happened twice in a row.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it was. It was almost like an exact replay, except there was only a runner at second and one out of the 10th. And then it was critical. Auburn was down by a run because they'd homered for the fourth time in the game. Yeah. That was the biggest anomaly of game one, was the fact that Coastal hit four home runs.
Yep. Not a home run hitting team, but they hit them, and they had two players hit two, including their catcher, who was probably the MVP of that. I don't know if he got it. But
yeah, he should have been.
For me, he was certainly the MVP of that super regional.
Yeah, no question. So a tough one, and then Auburn on Saturday gets everything you could ask for from Dre Alvarez.
Yeah, he was terrific again, and that's what a way to finish the season and postseason. throwing five innings, no runs against NC State, and then coming back and pitching very, very well against Coastal. Was it four? Did he go four innings or five?
Yeah, it went four.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the postseason, he goes nine innings shutout.
Yeah, that's just so, so impressive for that young guy. And, you know, we've seen many times that pitchers make a big step forward from freshman to sophomore, especially the ones that get that experience. Mm-hmm. So I think you can count on guys like him and Christian Chatterton and those guys to really, really take a step forward next year. But he was terrific. And, you know, I think Jason pointed out to me while we were sitting there that the batters looked sluggish after playing that late game Friday night, and the pitchers didn't because, of course, they weren't involved in the game. And I think that there was something to that until later in the game when, you know, things got a little sloppy there for Auburn.
Yeah, I actually thought, I mean, Auburn, the pressure was on after losing the first game, and especially with Coastal having held their ace. You thought the bats really needed to be active in the early going for Auburn. They do get that run across in the second, but it's really all they could generate. And Morrison, left with a pretty comfortable lead after Coastal's bats got going in the seventh.
Yeah, it was pretty much over then. I thought, yeah,
you don't score enough to win on Saturday. I mean, you could try to hold them to one, but I thought that Friday you mentioned the decision not to bunt with Coop. Mm-hmm. I thought you could question how long Dutton stayed in the game potentially on.
Yeah, and it wasn't Friday. The 3+, but I mean, he just he struggled.
Yeah, I thought that, and not only did he struggle. Look, you had to go with him on Friday. The way the season's gone, the way he's pitched, the fact that you didn't really have another obvious candidate. Alvarez would have been the other one, and Alvarez had just pitched on Sunday and was your game two starter. So I think, I mean, there's no second guessing the decision to go with Dutton on Friday as the starter. Carson Myers had pitched very well down the stretch, and so there was a thinking, and had pitched. Carson Myers had come in for Dutton in the Stetson game, right?
Yeah, and that's one where I wondered. It's like, boy, he was really pitching. He was pitching so well, but he wasn't going to be able to come back after the rain delay. But yeah. Griffin Graves came in, and I thought was
terrific.
He was the best we have seen him. That's the other thing that I had people wondering. Man, do you not put him back out there till he gives up a base runner?
Yeah,
but he has, I mean, he'd gone three perfect innings with five Ks.
Yeah, but I feel like he was probably reached his limit. I think he probably felt that way too. He's not a guy that's thrown a lot of innings this season. I don't remember. Maybe he has thrown more than three, but I don't recall.
I don't recall. But man, he was so sharp.
Hetzler had pitched well of late, right? And so you go to Hetzler and you're thinking it's fine. But that catcher for Coastal, who is a junior, if he wants to stay in college baseball.
Hey, that whole team. Did you see how many underclassmen? Yeah. I mean, it's like I kept looking up at sophomore, redshirt, sophomore. They're ace. Sophomore. Both their starting pitchers, if I'm not mistaken, were sophomores.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know in this house settlement era, like if Coastal will be able to, you know, maybe they can find the money to keep some of these guys in house. But there's a lot of talent on that Coastal team, and wouldn't be shocked to see some of it matriculate to the SEC next year. Like there's some serious ball players on that team.
Well, Auburn's already hit the portal pretty hard, Brian. I mean, is it five?
Five
additions through the transfer portal.
Yeah, they've done a great job, and that just tells you how much work they had to put in between preparing for the Super Regional and working in the portal that opened a week from today. They got three pitchers, two guys that I think are starters right away. Left-hander Drew Whalen from Western Kentucky as a sophomore, 9-3, 3.53 ERA, 90 strikeouts in 81 innings. So he's got some swing and miss to him. And then they got Jake Marciano, a left-hander from Virginia Tech. Now, he was 4-2 with a 6.08 ERA, but 71 strikeouts, only 18 walks in 60 innings, and a freshman. You know he's going to take a big step forward, mm-hmm. right, in year two. So I think you got two potential starters right there in Auburn's weekend rotation. Potentially they got another left-handed reliever, Garrett Brewer from Michigan State. You need as many lefty relievers as you can have. That's 41 strikeouts in 34 innings. So, again, you're getting some swing and miss there. They got Todd Clay.
Yeah, and that's great. It's great to see Todd back here at home. Yep. David, got to be so proud. I mean, he had two unbelievable games against Auburn this year.
Four of eight, a home run, and five RBIs in two games. In both.
But, I mean, it's not like he struggled the rest of the year. He led UAB in just about everything. 361 and was the conference newcomer of the year. He was at Pensacola State for a couple of years before heading to UAB, and now here back at Auburn. And, again, congratulations, David. Awesome. And pretty good job for my former yard boy.
How about that?
Yeah, how
about that?
How about
that? 13 doubles, 7 home runs, 51 RBIs as a junior.
And we were talking before we came on the air. I mean, Auburn, now Auburn is going to do its best to hang on. Auburn's got some really good guys that they would love to have back. Look at the possibility of the infield. All right, you lose Cooper McMurray and Derek Fabian.
Right.
But you've got, you know, Chris Rembert, Eric Snow, Eric Guevara, that you'd love to have back. And Todd played third for UAB, but I guarantee he can play first. He's a good-sized guy as well. So, I mean,
that would be a really good infield.
Yeah, you're not
really
kidding.
Good. Defensively, with some pop, some average. I mean,
but you got a guy who can play third base. He definitely can play first.
Yes.
So, I mean, and then he was the fourth, and then the fifth.
Is Ryan Farber from Texas State. He was a sophomore, batted 267, 13 doubles, 4 home runs, 33 RBIs. He's a switch hitter. He batted 340 as a freshman, so you know he's got a little bit more. He can hit better than 267 he's done before. And, you know, I think he's a guy that you bring in that can play shortstop, second base, you know, wherever you need him, switch hit, so you can use him in your lineup.
Yeah, that's great.
Just a lot of versatility with him.
Yeah, so, I mean, a tough way to end. But, I mean, it was a crazy – it has been a crazy postseason. The SEC.
Yes.
13 teams
started
the tournament. And two are going to open up playing each other.
LSU and Arkansas, right?
And they play each other in their first game in the College World Series. So one of them is immediately going to be in the loser's bracket.
I really think Coastal has a chance to win this thing again. They are really good. They've got a great pitching staff. And they
really do. People were like, well, we don't know about their bullpen. Goodness.
Yeah, they were good. Yeah,
we kept bringing
in big dudes.
We didn't even see one of the guys who is one of their top guys. They didn't even need him.
Yep. So they are very, very good. A lot of depth in that staff, and a lot of guys that stepped up with some big clutch hits too. Good at bats. So yeah, watch out for them.
Yep.
And I really like their coach a lot too. If anybody got to watch him or listen to him, he's just excellent.
All right, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We've got call holding.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And let's go ahead and get to the phones before we get to our first break. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I was just going to say I'm not disappointed with the Auburn baseball team this year. I'm disappointed with the ending, but overall it was an unexpected really good season. My one qualm is, what's up with bases loaded, 3-2 count, and you take a seed down the middle multiple times and never move the bat off your shoulder? I don't get that.
Yeah, it's tough. Sometimes that you're looking for something and if it's not what you're looking for,
sometimes you just freeze, I guess. But yeah,
it was tough. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt.
The opportunities, the batting with runners in scoring position, especially on Friday. Auburn scored 6 runs and had the opportunity to score a lot more. I mean, that's the thing. That's what hurt so bad is you had so many opportunities to score quite a few more.
I personally think Auburn was overseeded as a 4 overall, and then drawing Coastal Carolina. Their pitching staff is pretty phenomenal. So I was kind of worried about that to begin with, but like I said, overall, great job by the coaching staff this year, and look forward to them keeping that up next year. Appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I would say if you can hang on to these young guys, and now with it's going to be really interesting.
Now. Yeah, with
the settlement which happened late Friday, I wonder if there will be as much movement?
I don't think there will. I think schools have to budget things. I think you're going to hear new terms. For instance, I think if a team is looking for a starting quarterback, you have to pay a player starting quarterback money. If you've got a starting quarterback, you go out there and you pay somebody a backup or a third team money. I think you're going to hear terms like that at different positions. Auburn, in their offense, they might put more value on wide receivers than they do on running backs. So you might see them signing a bunch of highly recruited, highly touted receivers and try to sign some running backs they think have really good upside and stuff like that. Just examples of that I think you're going to see more of now because you're working with a budget. You can only apply so much to so many players at each position. It's just going to be kind of how you kind of shape that team within that budget.
It's going to be really interesting to see how creative schools can be.
Until it gets blown up with a lawsuit. And then
I hope that you're right as far as like maybe we'll see the transfer portal calm down a little bit as far as the number of players looking to change schools in every offseason, just because maybe with a level playing field, as John Cohen likes to say, with a level playing field and tighter budgets, maybe there won't be as much the belief that you're going to go out there and find your windfall somewhere. Like maybe you'll give more serious thought to sticking with the school that signed you initially.
I think that's exactly what you're going to see more of, right? You're still going to see guys transfer that have been at a school for a couple of years and just want to play.
And situations play. Could become untenable at places too, but for the most part, like the strictly, especially the ones that aren't necessarily playing time motivated, right? Like the strictly financial moves,
right.
You can see fewer of those.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. I think you'll still see the group of five or six, whatever it is.
No, the kids want to move
to
up.
Power four, right?
Yes.
More money, more ability to compete against the best of the best, and vice versa. The guys moving down because they want to play and don't want to sit on the bench. But I don't think you will see as many high-profile, high-salary-type transfers anymore.
We will see.
Yeah, right. But I could be wrong.
Yep. We'll get to our first break. Anthony, hang on. You'll be up when we come back. Just underway here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
On Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. And let's head right back to the Drive hotline. And Anthony is up next. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Good, man.
I tell you, Friday was just great. You couldn't get no better news. This is a long time coming. Now players can cash in, if I'm not mistaken, a percentage of the TV networks. I think that's what I saw. And perhaps even the gate or whatnot, get a percentage of that. And, of course, name and likeness like the Wolves getting or whatnot. The university can clearly flat out say this is employee and we're going to pay him. So does that mean benefits like health insurance, a retirement plan, sick leave, that sort of stuff.
Now the answer to that question, in a word, no, because I think universities are still fighting the term employment, and this is NIL revenue sharing,
but they're not calling it. Yeah, they're doing everything they can to avoid calling them employees.
Now I believe as a student athlete you do have university health insurance for a while, including after your career is over. That's one of the things the NCAA likes to tout. I don't know the time period as far as when that expires, but no, the answer to your question as far as like will they be treated like full-time employees and get access to everything that a university full-time employee gets, no.
You still there?
Yeah.
One other thing, well, how about this performance bonuses? Like, if you've got a running back that hits 1,000 yards or 2,000 yards, any incentives can be set up financially if he does that, or win a Dope Walker or a Heisman, or you got a big old nasty defensive tackle, wins an Outland Trophy or something, any financial consideration as far as, setting goals?
The problem with incentive-laden deals would be that you're dealing with a $20.5 million cap no matter what, right? So, like, you can promise the athlete, here's some extra money if you accomplish this or that, but it really, I mean, it, I mean, you, you, I mean, you could do that, but you could also just give the money to the athlete at the beginning of the season. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like you can't. I suppose there wouldn't be anything preventing a school from having performance. I don't know what the rule is there.
Yeah, I do wonder about that.
About performance based or incentive based NIL deals, but it wouldn't be it would still have to fall in the $20.5 million that you can spend on your players over the course of a year.
Well, yeah, you couldn't go over your budget, but just like you got coaches, they got the annual salary that you got set up, but there's always an incentive where if he makes the conference championship, there's a $100,000 bonus, or if he beats Alabama, there's $50,000 or something like that is what I'm saying. So I'm just wondering, you already got a deal set up for what you normally going to get, but that just that extra if you hit those milestones or whatnot. But we'll see how that plays out in the course of this thing. But it's just a great day. Players should have been all the time getting something like that. But, back in years ago, 50 years ago, there was no need for that because nobody was making the kind of money they make.
No, you're right about that.
With those billion-dollar contracts and these corporate sponsors with all this money. So we'll see now if the playoff expands, because I'm almost certain now that since this has come through, they're going to almost have to do that to bring more money and more revenue.
Anthony, there's also avenues for, and I forget how far back we go. I think it's like 2015 or 2016. There are avenues for recent student athletes to go collect on some of the money that they weren't allowed to earn through the NIL rules that were in place, for the last couple of years in the system before NIL came along. I think there's back pay available for student athletes from 2015 through 2019 or 2015 through 2020. Which is another, I think like. Certainly, I never bought the arguments that you were going to ruin the sport. You were going to ruin college athletics by allowing players to get money. I do think that it's finding competitive balance. Finding something that's sustainable and allows for actual competition. But yeah, like a level playing field that doesn't rip off the student athletes, I think is probably the best possible scenario. We'll see if that's what we have here.
When you look at Vanderbilt, and we talked about that in the previous phone call. Had it not been for transfer portal and NIL, there is no way that Vanderbilt would have won more than 3 games last year. But that made them competitive. It made them push other people all the way to the fourth quarter, trying to get to the buzzer to get out of the stadium, and then want that normally doesn't happen. So, no, it's not going to do that. Those guys, anybody that's playing a sport like that, they love that sport. Now they just can get paid. That's the only difference. They love it. You got some players, they wouldn't take anything for it. They love it.
Well, think about how much fun this past year's basketball season was, right? Like, think about how great the SEC was. So great in men's basketball this past year, the best year maybe any conference has ever had. And
it's gonna get
you don't
and it's gonna get better.
But you don't have this past year without NIL in the portal, right? Like you don't assemble you don't assemble these rosters without
more than half the rosters came from other schools.
And how many of them came because of NIL money
yep.
in the SEC? Like this past season happened because of some of these changes.
It's going to get better all the way across the board. You're always going to have one or two people saying it's going to destroy it. It's not going to destroy anything. It's going to make everybody competitive. Everybody going to be fighting every week. You're going to see that everywhere. I don't care who you're playing. You're going to have to be a cat and dog fight to get out of there in the fourth quarter. And that just going to make it even better. The guys getting paid, they're going to want all they can want, and everybody's going to want all they can want, so it's just going to get better. But we'll see how this thing works out, whether they sign some kind of contract. It's going to be 2 years, 3 years, or one, or if you leave, you got to pay back the money or a portion of it, or some kind of financial consideration got to come across the table if you move from here to there. But we'll see. Maybe that might be cut the portal down or cut it out completely. Now, if you get a contract and you got to be there 3 years, a certain amount of money. Who wants to pay back a couple $1 million? I don't know nobody that wants to do that. Do you?
But we'll see if they can do that.
We'll see. Well, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Anthony. He brings up some really interesting points. I saw the tweet from Pete Nakos a little earlier today saying that collectives and college general managers he's talked to say starting quarterbacks are still going to be $2 to $4 million, regardless of what the salary cap is. It's going to come from they're going to get that. And he says, and if the money has to come from the school's $20.5 million, that'll kill them. So that money's still going to be coming somehow. But I mean, they're going to have to justify. They're going to have to go through this clearinghouse thing that's supposedly going to have to justify $2 million to $4 million.
Until one gets turned down, they get sued, and it all gets blown up.
Well, I want to see the first thing that they say is justifying that right. that is an NIL deal that's really worth $4 million.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Heather Dinich has a story on ESPN.com where she's talked to a couple of the conference commissioners about, and they seem to be, they're saying all the right things right now.
Yeah.
They believe they will be able to enforce these NIL rules through their clearinghouses and through what's the new College Sports Commission.
Yep.
It could end up being a very big deal, but the fact that on Friday in the immediate aftermath of the settlement passing, you had the news of. You got a CEO of the new corporation that's going to be in charge of enforcing these rules, and it's a CEO. I think the most interesting thing about it is you have a CEO who serves conference commissioners. You have not had that you have not had a guy who answers to conference commissioners making rules in the past in college athletics.
You had one that everyone had a voice from the smallest school to the largest school, not just the conference commissioners, no.
Yeah, and so you had a Zoom this morning, I believe, with Jim Phillips, Greg Sankey, and Brett Yormark, among others. So you had the major – I mean, the fact that the major conference commissioners are willing to take Zoom calls together, right, suggests that there's a more unified atmosphere. I think even the Pac-12 commissioner was there, and it's like, wait a minute.
It's not a conference.
There's only a couple of schools in that thing. Wait a minute. But it's they seem to think that they're going to have at least the start of something they can get a handle on, which has not been the case for the last couple of years.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Just getting started. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Monday Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday edition of the drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews, Drew at the controls. And Brian, I said, it was sort of like the weather. It's good and bad, good and bad. Well, baseball, tough. Tough weekend for baseball.
On the field, yep.
Football, another big recruiting weekend, and hey, there are commitments. Hey, we have one for this coming year and one for the following year.
I don't think it's any coincidence that the health settlement got finalized and Auburn's now getting commitments. That's definitely related there. Eric Perry, who took an official visit over the weekend, he's running back from South Haven, Mississippi. We have him as a 3-star. But I've watched this film, and I think he's an excellent pickup for Auburn. He plays quarterback. He's compact. He's quick. He's got some pop in his speed there. I just think
– what's his size?
I'll have to look that up real quick. But I'm pretty impressed with him. My guess is he's 5'10", close to 200. But let me see what the official listing is. Let me see if I eyeballed it right. 6'195". So, okay.
Okay.
That's even bigger than I thought. Okay, well, great. I think Auburn, and I think talking about the new revenue sharing and the plan, I think in Auburn's offense there's going to be premiums on quarterbacks and receivers at the top, and I think work your way down. Offensive tackle obviously has to be high, and other positions, but every position's going to have a budget, and every position's going to have how much are you paying the starter, how much are you paying a backup, how much are you paying the third teamer. You just got to structure it kind of like that. I'm not saying it has to be exactly this, but there has to be some sort of a limit there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Every school has to know, again, and we'll get more into the settlement here in a little bit. I mean, every school has to know, all right, here's what we have. Here's what the school has in its $20.5 million budget.
Yep.
We've got, we have this much for this sport, and then we break down, that sport into starters and starters at what positions and so forth. So, I mean, this has, this is something that everybody's been getting ready for. So they have to know what they're going to do, and they've got to know that they're going to be competitive with other schools on most of these guys.
And I think at running back, Auburn added an extra running back in Omar Mabson, who changed from the 2027 to 2026. And has put on some Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's put on some serious size in the last, I guess, 6 months since I saw him play back in August.
He's still growing. I mean, you know.
But he looks like a different player to me, and in a good way. And I think he's going to be a guy that's going to overplay, maybe where people expect him or had him rated or whatever. And I think Eric Perry looks like one of those potential guys too for Auburn. So I like what they've added to the running back room, even though these guys aren't five stars and people who are going to be talked about a lot until they get on the field and show what they can
do. Well, you know, I would say guys that you're taking right now are ones that the coaches feel pretty darn good about. I mean, so they added 2026 in Eric Perry, and they also added a 2027 flipping from Florida State.
They did. Jalen Scott just finished up his sophomore season at Mobile Williamson as rising junior. A very physical defensive back. I think he's probably a buck 60 at most right now, but he will knock the you know what
out of the field. He's got 2 years of high school left.
Yes, so he's going to get bigger. To me, he looks like a guy that could be a number one shutdown type corner. But because of the way he's such a physical player already, if he grows into that body, you feel like maybe his best position might be nickel or maybe a really, really talented coverage safety, depending on how big he gets. But I think he's definitely a great pickup. I think he's also a guy that looks to me like he could potentially be a special teams type player, return guy, potentially. He's got some explosive speed, it looks like.
Yeah, so Auburn picking up a couple of commitments there. Obviously, a good weekend. They've had some really, really impressive visitors here the last couple of weeks.
Loads of five stars, top 100 players, four stars, top 250 players have all come through Auburn. Hasn't been a lot of action the first couple of weeks in because this house settlement didn't come through. Mm-hmm. But this past weekend, you saw that change, and you're going to see Auburn start adding more and more commitments. And they're going to have more visitors this week, and then more visitors this weekend, I think, to close out their official visit window here. So should be some exciting recruiting news. If you're into Auburn football recruiting, this is a time to really start looking into it and getting into it. So as I think from now until, say, mid-July, you're going to see a lot of guys making decisions and committing. And I think Auburn's at 8 commitments now. Wouldn't be surprised if that's doubled at least within the next 6 weeks.
Boy, they'd really like that. You'd like to have that as you get ready for the start of fall camp. I mean, media days is about that time. You're talking about middle of July. And then 2 weeks after that, you're starting camp because the season starts before September.
And now that baseball's over, it's football's up next, right? So that's.
Is track and field done? Is every single thing done?
I don't know about track and field. It's about done.
But it's getting to the point where that's the next big thing we're looking at. There's no question about it.
And you know, we're only a couple of weeks away. Amid everything that's gone on this season and everything that's gone on, you know, with the collective bargaining agreement, or not collective bargaining, with the house settlement. Collective bargaining's next, but the house settlement. We're in the last couple of weeks of the Under Armour deal.
That's right.
Like Auburn.
Oh,
Auburn.
Right.
Go around town and get you some deals, buddy.
You absolutely can.
It's
3 weeks. That's right.
Three weeks from today is the last day with
Under Armour.
It is almost the Nike era of Auburn athletics, which is an exciting development among all the other things that are going on around. And I had someone ask me, Bill. It's a bummer. Obviously, the baseball season's over. They will probably be moving in with hammers and getting to work. Like they're not finished with the renovations at Plainsman. That was a 2-year deal, mm-hmm. wasn't it? And I would think like aren't there still some things they want to?
I think there're going to be some permanent things out in right field.
Yeah, like there are some.
Well, the major thing was finishing up the coaches' offices. They had got most of the big building that was the for the rehab
the performance.
Yeah. So the bottom level.
Oh yeah.
They've got
that
most
used
of that
to
done
be
with,
rehab now for the coaches
with the weight room, and the top floor is going to be Butch Thompson, his assistant's offices and stuff, and a meeting room up there. So that'll be the big thing to get done probably this summer, I would think, because I know last summer the coaches were in the club. What's the Frank Thomas Club called?
Is that the whole play
Hall
club?
Of Fame.
Yeah, they're,
Hall of Fame
club. They're in that one. And then I think as the season started, they had to move over to the stadium for a while. Yeah. So they've been sort of just getting by, you know, without offices or anything. But that's going to change here soon.
It was really – how cool was it to see the stands on the Performance Center? this weekend.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. I mean,
there were people hanging everywhere.
Yes, just adding seats in the hours up until the start.
I liked the risers they put there on the terrace down the first baseline too, because there usually were just tables and things, but you couldn't see there. So they put the little risers there.
That was really nice.
So you could stand and then see the field a little bit better. Yeah. I mean, I thought they did a great job of trying to accommodate as many people as they could. It's a shame. Shame that it ended the way it did. But I mean, what great crowds there were.
And you know what? And kudos to the not insignificant number of Coastal Carolina fans.
Yeah, you're right about that.
The trip too,
because they were pretty vocal.
Yeah, I mean they go and try to paint, you know, every park teal that they go to, and there was some teal in Plainsman Park this weekend.
Right behind us. They were very, very vocal.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's hard to cheer for a team that just beat your team, but I mean.
Nah. I don't.
No, for you?
It depends on the team. I mean, when it's not one that is your rival or something, you know. I mean, they came in. And they played baseball the way it's supposed to be played.
And I would love to see them advance in the College World
Series. It'd be amazing to see them go all the way.
I mean, if someone's
got to win the championship, and it's not going to be Auburn.
I mean Arkansas, LSU,
those
and Oregon State are the only three national top eight seeds left. Yeah. And Arkansas, like I said, and like we said a while ago, Arkansas and LSU open up against each other. I mean, it is crazy. There are some
after Arkansas. Knock Tennessee out, right? So that would be
No, that's a team that
hate that for Tennessee, by the way.
Easy to root for them, and it'd be cool to see them continue to take. Talking about Coastal,
right. Another team that's easy to root against.
Easy to root for Coastal, it'd be cool to see them.
I think there's one game left tonight.
Make some noise.
I believe there's one game left tonight. I think it's.
It was hard to get into it after Auburn got knocked out.
We got Murray State and Duke tonight.
Okay,
yeah, that's
Murray
right.
State has Murray been State swinging the bat pretty good.
So we have seven of the eight teams for Omaha. Oregon State won, as you guys mentioned. UCLA, Arkansas, LSU, Louisville. Arizona,
Coastal Carolina,
and Coastal Carolina, and then we'll have an eighth team tonight. I believe nobody from last year's College World Series is making a return trip, including reigning national champion Tennessee, who was just eliminated by Arkansas.
The LSU Arkansas matchup there in the first round of the College World Series is the only one matching top 16 seeds. I mean, you have, three or four teams that weren't even top 16 seeds that are in it with Louisville.
Just a handful.
The Duke Murray State winner is going to be one. Arizona was not.
Coastal
was 13.
Coastal, Arkansas, LSU, and Oregon State, right, are the four of the top 16 that have made the
UCLA College was 15.
That's right. Okay, so five. So UCLA makes five. So five of your eight will be from the top 16, and none of them from your top. LSU's your top seed?
No, Arkansas is your top seed. Three is your top seed. LSU was six.
Yeah,
State eight.
Yeah, so just a handful of your top eight.
There was some great baseball. There was some crazy baseball. That North Carolina Arizona was unbelievable.
I actually didn't realize Arizona won that.
When Carolina won the first game, 18-2, and then Arizona won the next two games.
Close games. The next two, and Arizona wins them both.
Yep, that's one of those where Carolina needed to save some of those runs. For the next 2 days.
Unfortunately, it's not cumulative.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, it's not. It
by total run score, they probably still won.
They do that in soccer sometimes, right? Where it's like, you know, how many goals you score in the first leg, the second leg added up. No, that's not how it works in super regional play.
Yep, so the College World Series will be set after tonight. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon, 10 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio on the start of a week where it looks like we could get a good bit of rain during the week. Now, don't have to worry about any sporting events, at least not university sporting events going on here locally. We're about done for the year, and it was well past time, but it was time for them to go ahead and get that settlement thing done, Brian.
Yes.
We've been talking about it for a few weeks, saying this has got to be affecting recruiting in all sports, because you had word that some schools were still, you know, offering the
USC.
Yeah, yes. Ridiculous numbers. Now
we'll see if they can back that up.
There got to be ways. So, like we were talking a little while ago, the schools are going to have a $20.5 million budget.
And to keep in mind, like it was in the Heather Dinich article, that as of Saturday, with the settlement being approved Friday, as of Saturday, deals have to pass the clearinghouse I believe.
So anything that was done before Saturday is still okay?
I think you're grandfathered in. If you made a deal before June 6th or June 7th, you can – so that those deals don't have to pass the clearinghouse and don't have to make up
there
the 20.
There were no rules in effect like this when those deals were struck.
Sure. So it's like so now you have to start factoring that stuff in, but previously it wasn't regulated.
Yeah, I'm just it's going to be really interesting to see what happens the next time school such and such, which expects to be contending, needs a quarterback or is looking for a game changing player, and for the last couple of years you've seen all of a sudden players enter the portal and jump right there, and you hear of the seven figure deals that they're getting. My goodness, the very very fortunate timing for the Texas Tech pitcher the other day.
Yeah, exactly.
She signed that seven figure NIL deal, and got it in the day before. You know, of course, her team gets eliminated. They lost, yeah. But she's got that deal in effect for next year.
The other thing to think about, and Arch Manning may not be a great example because maybe he can, because of who he is, get good NIL deals. But can a team now, like Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, LSU, afford to have a five-star quarterback like Arch Manning on their bench for 2 years? I mean, are they going to have enough money to do that? And my feeling is,
get him, probably not.
Right.
Like if you paid yeah. starting money, like I don't know how many quarterbacks, especially with what Bill was just saying earlier in the show, I don't know how many quarterbacks making starting quarterback money you can have on your roster in this era. It feels like the answer's
not a lot. If you want to, have offensive line and a running back and receiver and all the other positions.
And a basketball team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would be really difficult to justify, even if you could justify one
paying a backup quarterback more than your
NIL deal for a couple of $1 million for a quarterback, how would you justify and his backup making close to that?
Unless it's Arch Manning, where maybe you could. But
yeah, but I mean,
but still,
as an NIL,
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, hi, I'm the backup quarterback University of so and so.
But forget about the NIL aspect of it. Just, I mean, as far as like the $20.5 million.
Oh, the $20.5 million. No. It's got. That other money's got to come from NIL somehow, but I don't know how. That's where I said I can't see it being justifiable.
Yeah, so let's assume. But I would say let's stick to the 20.5 for a second. Like if 75% of that is going to your football team, as people are reporting,
say 14, 15 million.
How much of that should go to a starting quarterback?
15 million, you've got, and you have how many players on scholarship now? Do we know?
Oh,
do we think it's going to be 105? Up to 105?
I don't know about that.
And not all of them.
All right, so we'll say 100. I'm just going to say there are 100 players, 15 million. That's $150,000 if you just went, everybody gets the same thing.
Which
they're not.
Yeah, which you
want. Which they're not. But that would get, that gives you an idea of what the average is. So that's where you work. You have to work from that.
I wonder how many, obviously the quarterback's getting more. It's just, can it resemble what it's been the last couple of years, report?
Yeah, I don't know. All right, we'll talk more about that. Love to get your thoughts as well, as we've hit the halfway point here on the Monday Drive, back with the start of hour number two, so stick with us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. And I hope everybody had a good weekend. It was an eventful weekend. Huge crowds for Auburn baseball, but the Tigers' season comes to a close as they fall to Coastal Carolina in two games. The field for the College World Series just about set. One more game this evening. We had a replay of the Kentucky Derby in the Belmont.
That's right, Sovereignty, one of our favorite horses here on the drive. It's too bad that he didn't run in the Preakness.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you know, and I guess that's, you know, it was probably out of concern for the, yeah, you know, you know, don't want to risk anything with the horse. It's a living thing, but no, would have been cool to see a Triple Crown. Always more exciting. When there's the juice, yeah. When the Derby winner is in the Preakness, mm-hmm. the Preakness has a little more juice because then you might see him win the second one, and then when you have a horse that's won the previous two, go to the Belmont. Like that's so it's a little bit. You know, it lacked some of the Triple Crown juice, but still not a great race. And yeah, what a year! I mean, you win the Derby and the Preakness. You're in rare.
You went two for two.
You're in rare. Yeah.
You weren't in the third.
Yeah. Rarefied air. So what a season for that horse.
Yep.
The Duncan horse race. You know, I watched more tennis this weekend than I've usually been watching. Alcaraz and Sinner played a 5.5-hour French Open final yesterday. And it's on Max if you want to check it out. Both of the finals are outstanding. Sabalenka and Coco Gauff played in the women's final. But Alvarez and Sinner, they're both like 23. They've won the last five Grand Slams between them. And they just had an absolute war in Roland Garros. Five-set classic. So yeah, if you're looking for something to watch on HBO Max, check that out. Because it was just breathtaking tennis.
Yep. And next game of the NBA Finals coming up on Wednesday.
I think we're getting three more one-sided Thunder wins. That's my prediction on that. I thought game one, I thought game one, aside from the final 5.5-6 minutes, one team was clearly better than the other, and for pretty much the entire game two, that Thunder team was clearly better. I mean, look, maybe the Pacers can stretch it to six by winning one of these games at home, but I think the Thunder are a significantly better team and will show it over the next couple of games.
Yep. Sticking with basketball, Brian, Auburn working out, getting to know each other.
Yes, practices have started, and this is team building time right now, right here.
Oh, yeah.
And they have much more time than they could work with them, say, 5, 6, 7 years ago, so it makes a big difference. And I think all the newcomers are here. I think Tahad will be here sometime within the next week or two. getting him some time off.
Yeah, Tahad just getting a little bit of a break. The rest of the guys getting to know each other. I saw JG was he was over there at the end of last week watching some of the practices.
Yeah, and I hope to get over there soon too, just to check out all the newcomers. I mentioned this before, but I'm very excited about what this team can become and seeing all these new players and how they gel together. And I just think this is going to be an exciting season of Auburn basketball. I just see a lot of athleticism with this team.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and get out there and watch them so you have an idea of
who's
exactly.
I have no idea. Yeah,
yeah. We'd love for you to join in here in hour number two of the drive, the second hour of the show, brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can do so, get in touch with us, that is, by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, and Brett gets us started here in hour number two. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan, tell me what you think about Kershaw.
You know, I was nervous after the first couple of starts, because he's having to pitch totally backwards compared to how he pitched earlier in his career. But the slider has gotten better with every start, and he's still he can still give you some real quality innings. And you know what? And he's healthy right now, which is in
a lot of Dodgers can't say that.
I was going to say, in contrast to a lot of starters in that rotation. So yeah, glad the old horse can still get out there.
Yeah, they also just activated two relief pitchers who ought to be able to help them out.
Yep. I like Kirby Yates a lot. Glad Kopech's back. I thought Kopech was the best reliever on the team for a big stretch last year.
Down the stretch,
down the stretch.
Yeah, I would think that maybe if he's back and he's healthy, he would probably be the next guy up for in a Tanner Scott emergency. Although they've used Kirby Yates at times to close out as well.
Yeah. Hey, last thing I read where Jovic wouldn't be there. It said later in the summer, y'all. Have any idea when that'll be?
I'm
not really sure. I've not talked to them about that. I was under the assumption everybody's there, but maybe I just missed that part of it.
Okay. All right. Have a great evening.
I wonder if that's also related to. I know some international students are having a harder time getting student visas and getting everything squared away, and so maybe that is something. Again, have not heard anything about this. Just speculating that might be another. I mean, that and the fact that it was pretty recent. His addition to the Auburn roster and his addition to Auburn's recruiting class. So yeah, not all that shocking that it might be taking a little bit longer. Hopefully, that's not something that interferes with his development.
Yeah, I mean, because we have seen you've seen sometimes in the past where you think you're getting somebody, and it just seems to just drags on and on and on and on and on. So, hope Phillip is able to be here, pretty soon, because it would be great for him to also, be part of this team building process and learn his teammates. So that's a good
sooner the better. That's point. For sure.
Yep. Yeah. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline here on this Monday edition of The Drive. So, basketball practicing going on. Football, it's been camps and official visitors. As, we'll have just the summer workouts, which don't involve coaches, that will be
captain's practices.
Well, that's what they used to be called.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that's still what it was.
Might as well call it that now, for now, at least. And then this is going to be another big week of official visitors. I know Auburn's got, I think it's five coming in midweek, I think starting tomorrow, including Caden Prothro, the really talented tight end that Auburn's recruiting really, really hard right now. And then it looks like they're going to have another 10 or so this weekend to close it out. So it's another big week of Auburn football recruiting.
And, I mean, and that's what they wanted. It wanted to go ahead and do a lot of these guys. I would think more of them are going to go ahead and start making up their minds because they're going to be going the ones that have been in for the last couple of weeks will be making their final visits and things, too, as well. When is the because don't things sort of shut down in July for a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's the end of June now is the dead period. I can pull that up real quick. But, yeah, it's coming up soon. And, you know, that'll give the coaches a little break, right, from recruiting and from hosting. Players will still be able to contact them on the phone and such, but they can get a little time away with their families before we get back into the grind of two-a-days in the season.
Yeah, so Auburn's up to, what'd you say, eight for eight the 2026 class?
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things we had talked about, I mean, it was great as far as when we're looking at the 2025 season, that just about everybody was here and went through the winter workouts and spring practice. There were just a half dozen players, and they've been on campus now for a week or two as they're getting acclimated, going through, I guess, orientation and things like that, and we'll start working out, working out now with the rest of their teammates.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great to have had all those guys here. And, Brian, you know, we've seen some preseason predictions. You know, Auburn is being listed as a team that has the potential to make some noise this year. But you know, they've got to get it done. Auburn can't get off to a slow start. Well,
that Baylor game's big for Auburn. It's really big. It's a road game.
I think big's an understatement. I think it is tremendously important for Auburn.
Got a brand new quarterback making his first start for Auburn. Whoever that is, it's going to be a real test.
If it's not Jackson Arnold, I will be really surprised. I will be too. Though.
Just checked. It is the last weekend of June is when the dead period starts. June 23rd is the first day.
Oh, okay. Wow, so that's 2 weeks from today.
Yep, and then the entire month of July is a dead period.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. July is, which is good.
Yep.
Players, you know, the players will be making up their mind a lot, though, as you said a while ago, in the month of July.
Yep, I think over the next 5 weeks it's going to be a lot of commitments.
The work Auburn's done over the last few months, right, has been important to, you know, staying in the hunt for a lot of these guys that, like we'd seen in the past, when you're not even in the conversation for guys in June, it's too late. You're not going to be able to because they're going to make their minds up. They're really not considering new contenders and stuff. And so, you know, Auburn has worked hard to maybe get some good news over the next 60 days or so before you really start ramping up high school football, you know, preseason activities and stuff. Like Auburn could get some good news about who wants to join the fold for the class of 26.
They could, and they should, and they have done a great job bringing in really talented players. Players not only that are highly rated, but you know, teams like Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Florida, Michigan, whoever else, top schools in the country are all recruiting. Auburn's in there with those kids too, so you know they're recruiting the right players.
We were talking about it off the air, and you know, getting back to the house settlement a little bit. Like one would think that conversations now, you know, now that we're in the house settlement era, the clearinghouse era, conversations would regard, you know, conversations with recruits for 26 involve like what percentage of the 20.5 million do you think that they deserve? Like I think it's fair for recruits to wonder like where do I factor in that you know in the distribution of your revenue sharing money.
Yeah, I wonder if it's almost like, all right, this can be your base. I mean, because that's basically your $20.5 million. That's what the university is paying you.
With the expectation, I think that most of the major conference schools fielding bowl subdivision football teams are going to spend about 75% of that on football, which 75% of 20.5. gets you about what? About 15.
15.
Yeah.
Just say 15. Yeah. I mean, you can like I said, roughly when you say 100 football players getting $15 million is $150,000 on the average.
Right.
Now that means probably some of the guys may just be on scholarship.
Yeah, I would think that money tends to get concentrated towards your top 40 players or so, your top 30, top 40 players, and probably your top 5 or 10 at priority positions, quarterback, receiver, the corner, pass rusher, you know, the value spots in the NFL.
Pass
offensive
protector.
Offensive tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 5 or 6 where that might even be, you know, that might be prioritized.
Yeah, and it's we're just sort of you know, we don't really know exactly how, you know, how proposals can be, but yeah, you're limited now. I mean, there is a cap, and it is $20.5 million. Or so per school, and then that has to be decided, that divided up. John Cohen sent out a letter on Saturday about the House settlement, and pointed out that Auburn is fully funding revenue sharing the $20.5 million investment, and said Auburn will also allocate 113.8 additional scholarships year over year, and that cost is about $5.5 million.
It would be shocking for anyone with the media rights money, forget about other sources of revenue for athletic departments. It would be shocking for anyone in the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, I would even say the Big East schools. Like, it'd be shocking for any of those schools to not hit the $20.5 million cap. Like, I think you're bringing in enough revenue just through your broadcast deal with those schools that it would be like, yeah, you should be able to afford. And then of course there's also other for, you know, whether it's implementing raising ticket prices or you know, a fee for all students. You know, you could add a fee to tuition for general students and get your $20.5 million. Like, so there are outside ways of raising the money, but I would be like, Auburn says they're gonna hit the cap number. I would be like, there are probably,
I can't imagine many schools. Yeah, you're
there are
right.
There are 60 to 80 schools in, you know, in Division I, I'd say, between your major conferences and factoring in your Big East schools that are going to try to play big time basketball. I would say there are probably 60 to 80 schools that should be expected to hit that cap. It's going to be tougher at the mid-major level because you don't have that broadcast deal that makes it easier. And then beyond that, when you get into like D2 and stuff, that's going to be it's a different proposition. But no, Auburn, one of, I'd say, I mean, 16 in the SEC and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 80 nationally that should be expecting to hit that number.
All right, so we'll get into this a little more. I know we need to get to break here pretty soon, but what I'm wondering about, I'm not 100% clear on. All right, so. I haven't read the full settlement. Have collectives now moved within the athletics department?
A lot of schools have moved collectives in-house. Yeah, a lot of schools are moving the collective in-house and doing it that way.
Yep. I wasn't sure if that was written in the, or that was part of the settlement, or just an understanding of the settlement.
I think that when collectives can't, like, once sponsorship deals have to pass the clearinghouse, I think the idea, like, I think that the objective of a collective, right, to raise money for money, like, to raise funds that you're going to distribute to the student athletes, that becomes a tougher proposition. So if you're selling a subscription service, you know, a video service or something, you know, that could be, like, I could understand War Eagle Plus, you know, staying alive for Auburn. But I think that On to Victory will be sort of a general fundraising thing rather than a direct, like, oh, you're going to raise money, which we will then provide to NIL. You know, it could become a little more general than that.
Yeah, because I was going to get to a couple of the paragraphs that John Cohen had in his letter to Tigers Unlimited and season ticket holders and so on. He says, supporting On to Victory and continuing to invest in season ticket sales and records in numerous sports, you're turning championship dreams into reality. He says, despite the changes ahead, On to Victory remains a critical component to support Auburn student athletes. Donations to OTV provide Auburn with a competitive edge in both recruiting and retaining elite student athletes. And continue with resources committed to On to Victory will continue to put Auburn in a position of strength with new NCAA revenue cap regulations. So that's what it sounded like. I just I was interested.
Yeah, I think the role of collectives changes. I think the collectives could still be around as a way to raise money, as a sort of a fundraising and outreach arm for the university. It won't play the same role in like the way it worked for a long time, where it was sort of like you are directly helping your team recruit by donating money to these collectives. I don't think that's going to be the way it operates anymore, because the collectives won't have the same role in paying players.
Well, they're going to have to help some of these players find NIL deals too. That's going to be a big part of their job now.
The NIL deals that are approved. Right.
Find actual right. endorsement deals, and not NIL deals that were just like, here's some money, go play for the school.
Right, until somebody sues and this all gets blown up. Just
it's $600, right?
Yes. Yeah, just do that so one day
do,
every day.
No, what you do, well, yeah, what you do, I was thinking it's sort of like the IRS, could be like, sort of like IRS rules, where $10,000 and you see all these $9,999, you get $599 deals, you get 20 of them for one guy, and you know, so forth. That way you can do that, you don't have to get approval as long there as it's go. Not over 600 for any one.
I believe, because that question has come up. So,
of course it has.
So the moment you accept, it's $600 in total. Oh, so the moment you accept $599 deal number two, now your agreement with that organization is subject to the clearinghouse, because they have paid you more than $600.
Okay.
So it would be like that.
So
that,
anyone getting more than $600 total in NIL has to get that approved. You're right. That's going to be really interesting to watch.
Or it's any individual, like I think in the case of, you may be able to get different $500
deals.
That's
what I was saying. You get 50 different ones.
Right, but if they're coming from a collective or coming from an organization,
they won't be coming from a collective. Yeah. No. We need to get to our first break. John, if you get a chance, we had John on the line. John, give us a call back, 334-321-1390, as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. We got a short segment here to sort of get us back on track. So let's talk Monday musings, Brian.
Okay.
Something we look forward to every week. What were the sports musings today? Were they baseball?
Yeah, I just talked about how it's always disappointing when the season ends, but this was a good season for Auburn. They accomplished so much, including hosting the first ever Super Regional here at Plainsman Park. That's 25 years of Super Regionals. Auburn finally got it done. Set attendance records throughout the season.
Like, it felt like every big game, it set a new one.
It did. And, you know, the Regional, Auburn set a three-game series record for the number of fans. And then that Friday night Super Regional against Coastal was a new single-game record. So there's two more records set, and I'm sure they'll set more next season, right? It's just the – it's been four straight seasons now of season records in attendance too. So program is really
We talked about accumulating the talent in football and the job that Bruce Pearl and his staff have done in basketball. You look at the talent that there is that could return again. You can't say for sure. I mean, but Auburn's in a very good position as far as underclassmen. I mean, they're going to lose one of the best hitters that's come through here in Ike Irish, Cooper McMurray, Derek Fabian. Yep. Believe that's it as far as hitters that
Lucas
regular.
Steele.
Lucas was listed as a junior.
Was he?
Yeah,
that would be big.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, so you those are your three hitters who played a good bit. on the mound. Obviously, Samuel Dutton, Carson Myers, John Armstrong. Is Parker Carlson? I think
he was.
And there may be another, but I mean, there are a lot of returnees, potential returnees.
Special.
Yeah, very special freshman class.
Yep, and I that's as good a freshman class. Yeah, you're right, a Lucas, a junior. So, wow, I didn't realize that. So
yeah.
That's a big potential returning player there. But, yeah, those freshmen are special. And there's even some more guys from that class that didn't play much this season that could end up being really, really good. I'd say at least three or four of them potentially, depending on who comes back. Some of them, you know, we don't know what Addison Klepp is going to do. He's from San Diego, California.
Right.
Didn't play much this year. Does he want to stick it out and try to win a job, or does he want to go somewhere and where he knows he's going to play right away? We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But there's some really good players coming back from that team, and they've already done a great job, I think, in the portal of getting some filling some important needs. So
yeah, righty and lefty starter, it appears, a lefty reliever.
Yep. And then a power hitting or a really good all around hitting infielder, of course, who's from Auburn, which is always great.
Yep. Shout out to David again. Congratulations, and for Todd being able to make it back and be able to play for his hometown
school. That's awesome. That is awesome. But so that's basically what I talked about in the sports portion of it, and then for the musical portion, this is going to be easy for y'all to get, but going back 35 years, 1990.
Okay.
Unbelievable, EMF.
Yep, no.
Okay.
This is a debut single.
It's a good one, though.
From an all-girl group.
Okay.
That was consisted of the children of prominent musicians from the 1960s.
Oh, so this is Wilson Phillips, right? This is Hold On?
Yeah, Hold On.
Yes. Yeah, Hold On, Wilson Phillips.
Debuted on this day in 1990. Rose to number one on this day.
Well, Mamas and the Papas, right? Isn't that one of the?
Mamas and the Papas and the Beach Boys.
Yep. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, China was.
Brian Wilson and Mackenzie.
It was.
Mackenzie was the daughter. I
think that's right, isn't it?
It's well, China Phillips is Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Carney.
And Marilyn Rovell from the Honeys.
Yeah.
And then
Carney and Wendy Wilson.
Carney and Wendy Wilson are from the Mamas and the Papas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or no, Carney and Wendy
are Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I got that backwards. Yeah,
China is Michelle Phillips. Right.
Yes. Michelle Phillips.
Yes,
there is Michelle Phillips' daughter. Yeah,
because Mackenzie is her other daughter.
Right.
Remember?
Right. That's right.
Yeah, that's what.
Okay, we got it.
Yeah.
Got all that?
Yes, I think so.
Best new artist at the Grammys, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe Wilson Phillips.
I
believe Wilson Phillips.
I don't think they won. I don't think they won.
Maybe just nominated. Maybe they're nominated.
I think the only award they got was the Billboard Music Award for the Hot 100 Single of the Year, which was Hold On. But I think they may have lost out on that Grammy. They were nominated for like four or five in that era, but I'm not sure they won any Grammys.
Let me see if I can find it. Okay. 1991 nominees for Best New Artist. Black Crowes. Kentucky Headhunters.
Oh, the Kentucky Headhunters.
I'm unfamiliar with the work of the Kentucky Headhunters.
Kentucky Headhunters were a fun sort of a rockabilly country.
Lisa Stansfield and Wilson Phillips lost to Mariah Carey is her name. Did she ever do anything in the music industry?
I think she tried a Christmas song.
Here are some interesting things though about this song. Glenn Ballard was the producer and provided keyboard for it. Best known for being the producer of Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill album, which was pretty big back in the day. And Joe Walsh of the Eagles played guitar on this song, believe it or not. So, how about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I was spinning that one.
Yeah.
Back across town when Station Your Across Town came on the air for the first time.
Wow. The
year
mix. Yeah.
The year before was the Milli Vanilli best new artist.
Okay.
The year before was the Grammy that got revoked.
Yeah, that's right.
From Milli Vanilli, but no, so that's Alanis Morissette also nominated for best new artist, did not win. Lost to Hootie. A couple of years later.
Oh, well, while we're talking about music, did you see the news today? Sly Stone passing away.
Oh no!
Sly
and the Family Stone.
Away.
He
was a guy ahead of his time.
Everyday People, right?
Oh man, yeah.
A lot of good ones.
It's a family affair.
A lot of good ones.
I just want to thank you for letting me be myself again. That's some great stuff. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Get back on the on track schedule wise as we continue here with the Monday Drive. Come on in and join us.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. And let's get back to The Drive hotline. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I want to go down a little rabbit hole here. Now that I think I'm not sure what this collective really does, because if you think about it, the number one reason why people, like say Sharif Cooper, went after 1 year, went pro, and he's pro, and he can't come back to college because he hasn't used up his eligibility, is because he's getting paid to play that sport. It's amateurism. You're no longer amateur. You're getting paid to play football. So now, doesn't this just mean that everyone is now able to pay the players for playing football or playing basketball? Then why can't Sharif Cooper come back?
So your question is, why couldn't someone who's already left and come back? I mean,
yeah, he only played 1 year.
Yeah.
He went off, he made some money playing pro, and he's over in G League or whatever, making $60,000 or $80,000 a year. Why wouldn't he say, hey, I haven't used up my eligibility in college yet. The reason that you told me I couldn't come back is because I was a pro. I get paid for playing basketball.
Well, initially he did forego his eligibility to become a pro. Like I think that would be the argument from the NCAA, is that when he left college basketball to go try the NBA, like once he went through the NBA draft process.
What law says that?
I'm just saying the NCAA rules, like, that would tell you that when a player in football or basketball foregoes the rest of their eligibility to go into the draft, they can't come back because they've foregone the rest of the
draft. I think it's a good point, though.
All those rules have never been official. They're all getting overturned.
Right. Tested in court.
Yeah.
I mean, tested in court.
Yeah, there's no way that would hold up in court because the NCAA said that you forego your eligibility. Where does Sharif Cooper say that? Did he sign a piece of paper saying that?
Yes, I believe that he did. I mean, when he declared for the NBA draft,
he didn't sign a thing to the NCAA saying, I'm never coming back to the NCAA, did he?
No, I believe that.
No, I'm sure he didn't.
I mean, he may have filed paperwork. Well, he may have filed paperwork with Auburn. I don't know exactly the process there, but I would say, like, your question as to why couldn't he come back, the NCAA would tell you it's because when you go pro in a sport, when you leave college and go into the draft, you have given up the rest of your eligibility.
Just like they said you couldn't get paid, and just like they said you got to stay 4 years only, and now Ziegler's going for fifth year. Just like all these rules they keep saying that are just based on what? Just some guy standing up to the NCAA saying that this is the new rule?
Well,
nobody signed and said I agree to this.
No. Here's what's going to be one of the most interesting things about this is right now these conferences and their commissioners are saying that they're all going to agree with each other, that they're going to abide by these rules. That's what the NCAA had going. The NCAA was an organization which supposedly, let every school in it vote, had equal votes, and the rules that they had, that thick rule book, was something that had been agreed upon by the majority of the people in that organization. So that's what this new thing is. The CSC, I think, is right, isn't that it?
Yes.
The schools that are in that are all in agreement right now. The first time
they're in collusion.
Yes.
Right now.
Well,
there's another way to say
it. Well, they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But I mean, as long as nobody cracks there, and the courts for years had given the NCAA the right to do its own thing, regardless of what federal laws were. Now, that's not the case anymore. So I'm sure there will be some lawsuits. I haven't heard anybody talking about coming back from the pros to college, though.
No, I haven't heard about it.
But I mean, that's really interesting.
I think it's something that maybe could be tested and maybe could be won. Amateurism no longer exists anymore. It's gone. It's all about, you know.
Someone having turned pro in the sport and played the sport professionally and then coming back to college would be, I mean, it'd be a significant step if they started allowing that.
Well, remember years ago, if you were a professional in any sport, you couldn't come back. And the NCAA did back away from that,
yes,
and allowed players that had gone professional in baseball to come back and play football, or right, vice versa. So it's not that crazy to think, mm-mm, that the NCAA or the organizations may back down and go, well, I guess if you haven't used up all your eligibility, maybe you could come back.
Although when you get into like the nuance of eligibility too, when you're talking about Sharif, like his clock started,
right,
his clock started the day he enrolled at Auburn, and you have, what, 5 years to play four starting that day.
According to the NCAA.
Right, according to the current rules. Right. According to the current rules. So, I mean, if the rules changed, then, I mean, if the rules changed to the point where former professionals could come back and play college sports, then that would be a different consideration.
But that rule, if nobody cracks on that, there's nothing. I don't think you could win that in court. If everybody in a group of colleges says, all right, we're going to let players play for 5 years, then that's their rules. Then, right, if you wanted to play more, you'd have to find someplace else to play. But somebody would probably crack.
I guess the question is every single school, all 377 of them, all going to sign this?
That's very interesting. I don't know that. I wonder how many schools are actually involved in this. Is it basically the Power 4-5 and Notre Dame? I think that's what it is. So I don't know that this would include. I guess it's got to, though.
Yeah.
It's got to include all the smaller schools, because you're talking basketball, which is 300 and something schools.
Yeah, and I think Auburn has, I think by opting into the settlement, right, like Auburn and these other schools, like they agree to follow these sets of rules. Now you can sue to change the rules, and players are doing that constantly. But I do think, as far as like your question of has anyone signed up with the statement that they will agree to follow these rules, I believe the answer to that is yes.
Yes, I would think it is.
Okay, well, that's cool. Yeah, I guess that's what their NCAA is trying to actually create, the country club, you know, an NFL kind of a scenario. They're trying to create it, but I don't understand. I mean, NIL still seems like all you're doing is letting us pay players to make them pros in college, and then,
well, this is the new agreement is
paid,
yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whether you're getting paid, whether it's in college or pro, you're still a pro.
Yeah,
I mean, a professional. You're getting paid to do what you do. That's what you're getting. You're not getting paid to be a college. You're getting paid to play football. But I guess the question is, I mean, it's semantics at that point, but I guess my question is, NIL, we can still, you know, give $20 million in NIL, right? So does this really solve anything except just makes all the players pros?
I mean, you got to remember the NIL is separate from the revenue sharing is one thing. I mean, revenue sharing is like, this is because of this lawsuit and the agreement that schools have agreed that they're going to share 20-something percent. The average is $20.5 million. That's what they're going to start sharing with players, and that's going to go up every year for 10 years. That is completely separate from NIL now. NIL, players still have the right to earn NIL money on top of whatever that revenue sharing is.
Yeah, so I mean, really, does anything change?
Well, if your question is what's changed, then what's changed is that now you have like a regulatory body making sure that like everyone's on a level playing field when it comes to this NIL stuff. Like if your deals have to pass the clearinghouse, schools are allowed to directly compensate athletes for the first time. So there are things have changed, but it doesn't. I think your questions are valid ones as far as like the future of amateurism, the future of some of these, the questions about 4 and 5 years of eligibility, the clock, who can still play. Like those are, I don't know if this necessarily settles any of that, Pat.
Yeah, no, that's right. I personally think it opens some more cans. But I mean, I know if I'm in the G League and I'm making $48,000 and I can come back because I've played professionally for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I could come and make, you know, $1 million in a college, I mean, that would be really hard for me not to look at.
Yeah, although the notion of, I mean, college basketball, it's going to take, I guess it's possible, but like, again, in that $20.5 million salary cap era, it, you know, one would think that it's going to be tougher than ever for college basketball players to make that kind of money.
Well, and AAA, I mean, AAA, you think there's, how many guys went and are stuck in some AAA team, mm-hmm. you know, that probably in college would do great, you know what I'm saying? In baseball,
you would need if there's a real challenge to the amateurism rules. We appreciate the phone call, Pat. We got to take a break, but it's like if there's a real challenge to the amateurism rules and allows like what a drafted professional to come back in.
Yeah, not
in,
just drafted, like somebody who has played.
Yeah, somebody who's played in the developmental league or the professional league. Like that would be like that. There's that there. Pretty. That's a pretty significant step.
It is. From that's where now. I was saying. I feel strongly that schools have all agreed that they're going to go by their rules, yeah. And their rules are going to be that. That's where the how many years you can play and who's eligible to be playing are going to be part of that. And that may be something that it would be very difficult to go to court and overturn what an organization's rules for eligibility are.
And it's
different as far as getting paid and those things.
It would be, you know, I would like to see, again, I don't know about professionals coming back, but I would like to see, like, the draft. I mean, going into the draft shouldn't necessarily be the end
of
it. No,
I don't either.
I've never liked that. In football, in basketball, in baseball, I think it gives the player.
Because somebody, they're invariably guys that go through it, think with high expectations, it doesn't work. I don't see why that should negate their ability to come back and play.
I've never liked that rule.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
Billy Plummer here with Apex Pest Solutions. I want to thank everyone who